Okay, our next speaker is David Ashenson, Managing Director for Food and Import Safety, Levitt Brothers, and former Associate Commissioner for Food and Drug Administration in the United States.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here. Janet, thanks for inviting me. I know it's getting towards the end of the day, so I'll try to keep this brief. And when Janet asked me to speak, it's like, this meeting doesn't seem to have a food safety theme. I'm a food safety guy. What do you want me to talk about? She said food safety. So I'm going to talk about food safety and try to put it a little bit in the context of what we've been hearing today. And I think that from the talk that we've just been listening to, it's clear that we need to find a way to build integration into these systems. And if you look at it from a consumer perspective, and you look at all these issues, what's a consumer looking for? And we're talking about developing countries. That's where I live. It's where I grew up. It's where most of us spend most of our time. And we as consumers are looking for availability for any food 24/7, 365 days a year. We want it to be inexpensive, and certainly we don't want the costs to go high. We want it to be convenient, accessible, and it needs to offer health added on top of that and to have zero risk associated with it. It doesn't matter what food you buy, where you buy it, you want no risk associated with it. And our society has evolved from a state where 15, 20 years ago, the average family, if they were going to prepare a salad, would take a lettuce, chop it up, wash it, and serve it to the family of four. Now, the default is you go out and you buy a bag of pre-washed, pre-sorted, mixed salad greens, and you tip it out on the plate, and you expect the mayonnaise to fall right out on top of it. Essentially, that's where we have evolved to. So what are some of the challenges around this? I mean, that's the system that we've got. And how does this link in with what we've been listening to today in terms of the role of the local farmer in a developing country, or the local farmer, for that matter, in a developed country like Canada or the United States? I think in the context of one of the biggest challenges is we are dealing with a global food supply. It is here now, and it is ever increasing. The notion that, as Jogan was just saying, one option is to develop the solutions in the developed countries and somehow export it, it's too late. It's too late for us and it's too late for them. As we've heard from the earlier speakers, these folk are already getting innovative and creative. I mean, the presentation about what was going on in Cuba was amazing, how these people are just turning things around. So we're already there. And many of us are consuming foods that have been grown on a small local farm in a foreign country, or we're consuming shrimp that has come out of some quarter-acre pond in China. And we would question what controls are in there. So the global food supply is here. Canada and the U.S. and most other developed countries obviously are importing foods from many countries. We import from over 150 countries, from close to 250,000 registered facilities. That's just FDA-regulated foods coming into the United States. On top of that, we have got to be thinking about sustainability of the system. How are we going to sustain it for the local and the global food supply? We've got to be thinking about the environment. It's not a food safety issue. But the use of water, the concerns about water quality, heavy metals, et cetera, not only in relation to the local population, but in the context of the global food supply. Carbon footprint, again, an argument for buying local. At the end of the day, what we're looking for is a safe, nutritionally positive, inexpensive source of food that is sustainable. So what are some of the perceptions that are getting in the way of moving the ball forward? I think that, as we've heard today, there is a perception amongst many that if it's processed, it's bad, and if it's natural, it's good. And that is a consumer perception that I have heard many, many times. I mean, it's a broad statement, I realize that, but it's something that we've got to take on and address because it clearly is an inaccurate statement. And what that leads to is that high-tech, high processing, complexity equals bad and equals unsafe, and it equals poor nutrition. The corollary of that, or the reverse of that, is that local equals good and multinational equals bad. And I would argue that that is equally as inaccurate. There have been many statements made by people who in the United States who profess to be food safety experts who would say, You should eat local because we do not see large outbreaks linked to local produce. Well, duh. Of course you don't. The epidemiology to link it is an extraordinarily blunt tool, and you will never pick it up if it's local. But there are many out there who are preaching local equals safe, multinational equals unsafe, for those very inaccurate reasons. And to Jürgen's point, you know, the science may be non-existent in nutrition, although some would disagree with him. It clearly, there's no science to that statement whatsoever. So we've got perception problems as well linked on top of that in terms of how do you drive change. Linked on top of that, we've got a series of roadblocks and drivers, which you have to be thinking about as you're trying to move this ball forward. And I'm really putting these thoughts in the context of where you guys need to go of you've got to come out with some thoughts as to moving this train forward. Let's agree that one of the key elements that you need is prevention. And prevention is a key strategy, whether we're talking about food safety to prevent illness or from a nutritional perspective to prevent malnutrition, undernutrition, obesity, however you want to slice it. So the key here is to prevent the problems before they occur in the first place, not to respond to them, which is typically what we all do. We react constantly. And as a regulator for the last 8 years, I probably spent 95% of my time reacting and 5% trying to prevent, and it should be the other way around. So number one, we've got to be focused on prevention. We do have to have solid response systems. We have to be able to try to turn things around. But to that end, in the context of nutrition, trying to turn things around when it's already too late is what's the point? Let's focus on creative solutions that can deal with populations who are maybe already at a little bit at risk. And I was talking to Mary at lunchtime about this. And I have a personal investment in this, is the middle-aged man who's sort of saying, well, I'm not really overweight yet. I'm not super hypertensive. So what can I do nutritionally and from a food perspective to keep me as healthy as I can for further productive years in society? And that's not supposed to be demeaning to the elderly, but I think we do have to sort of look at where's our focus in that context. I think that the other aspects around the roadblocks and the drivers are the lack of clear standards. Jürgen's talked about the role of Codex, the WHO, in setting global standards, which clearly is a move forward on food safety. But if you take it down to the local level, what standards is that local jalapeno pepper grower doing in Mexico that was the source of 1,400 known cases of salmonellosis in the United States last year? Chances were that guy knew nothing about standards, and what he did know was not really helping produce a safe product. So you can set all the standards you want, but you've got to drive them down to that local level to make the difference. And that's important not only for the global food supply and what it's doing to Canadians and Americans, it's having an impact on the domestic market as well, and that's a huge driver. This is not just keeping Americans and Canadians and Europeans safe, it's keeping Mexicans and Guatemalans and Chinese and Vietnamese, et cetera, safe as well, which I think is a key element to build into this. Another roadblock is trust. There is this constant tension of lack of trust, and we heard about some of those this morning, the tensions between the private sector and the public sector. And again, a challenge to McGill as they move forward is what can you do to broker interactions between the regulators and the regulated? The typical response from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is that we will interact with the food industry when there's a crisis, or vice versa. There is no ongoing dialogue. The roadblocks to having those discussions of sharing data. Industry have vast amounts of information that they are reluctant to share because, it might cause us a problem. How can we build that model better? And so I think finding ways to deal with that roadblock would be key. Can't forget politics. That is another huge roadblock. And again, speaking from a U.S. perspective, the roadblocks around politics are multitudinous and various, but you are naive if you go into this not thinking about the impact of politics. Again, it's going to depend on the political system that you're working in. In the U.S., in Canada, it's everything from the Canadian Prime Minister or our President downwards who will make some comment about food safety, as President Obama did around peanut butter. Why he's feeding his kids peanut butter sandwiches 3 days a week from a nutritional perspective is something somebody hasn't challenged him about. But You know, he made that statement, and it had a massive impact on food safety and is driving legislation in the United States. We've also got politics at the local level. We've got politics with consumers. There are many out there who are making public statements about nutrition and about food safety, and you sort of take half a step back and say, why are they saying this? And it is essentially to maintain the scare factor. There is value in keeping people on their toes and scared about certain types of foods. So there's some inherent tensions that need to be, I think, worked on through the system with the private and the public sector. So we've talked about the challenges, talked about some of the perceptions, talked about some of the roadblocks and the drivers to be focused on prevention. If we now sort of wind this up and say, okay, what are the solutions? How can you try to bring this together? Clearly, we're dealing with a vastly complex system. And it would be naive of us to say we should focus just on food safety or just on nutrition. I think the way forward is how do you build that together, taking that vast amount of complexity. And we have a bunch of subject matter experts in here today, and we've heard about them individually. And you can't help but listen and think, well, that's really cool technology, or that's a really cool idea, but it could be applied to this, or that could be applied to that. And I think that's the key of joining those dots. So you've got vast complexity. But inherent within that, you've also got significant opportunities. And to move the ball forward, you need new approaches, whether it be on the nutrition or on the food safety, or, as I've suggested, interlinking the two. To get there, it's important to identify the champions, as we've heard from earlier speakers. That's absolutely key. The projects need to be doable, and from my personal experiences, you need to start small. It would be extraordinarily tempting to try to take on the world here, and my feeling is if you do that, you will lose. It's too complicated and it's too difficult. And I think your presentation earlier today is a wonderful example of how you just tackled a few states with literally a few $100,000 to start with and built a national program worth over $1 billion. I mean, to me, that's starting small with, yes, have the goal in mind, but let's keep the deliverables small. So again, I think as you're thinking forward, small, focused, doable, short-term victory. Otherwise, everybody gets burnt out and fed up. So let's make it doable. Let's focus on risk, too. Let's think about, and this is in the conjunction of the prevention strategy, where are the risks, and try to build in wherever you're looking here for the bang for the buck on the risk, whether it's a risk from a nutritional perspective or a food safety perspective, or preferably a combination of the two. So it needs to be risk-oriented. Finding a short-term solution, again, looking for that industry regulation interaction. What's the mechanism for that? I think that one of my final points on moving this ball forward, and it's something that I have learned working at FDA, is when you look at the complexities of these systems, what can we do to use modern technology to move the ball forward? And I think David's presentation was a classic example of how you built some really cool technology, wonderful websites. I mean, just truly like, wow, I want to get on there and play with that. I don't happen to have a couple of young kids like Guy, but you know, it would be cool to do that. So, I mean, I was talking to David at the break about why don't we sort of turn that into an app that could go on a phone of some sort? Why don't we link that into traceability and recall information on food safety? If you've got all that information on a SKU or a barcode, and it's all in one place, and consumers are scanning their stuff because they're inherently interested from a nutritional perspective, when something goes wrong, you can essentially get the information out from a food safety perspective. So it's looking for IT solutions to bring this all together, again, focused on risk. And likewise, to your project, David, on education. And I think it is looking for those creative information technology solutions. Given the complexity of this system, we can't keep doing it the way that we've always done. And then finally, when you're having to deal with response, obviously, as I've mentioned, traceability is an important component of that, as to how to link that piece in as you're looking for solutions. So despite the complexities, and at the end of the day, what we've got to do is to look for ways to link in nutritional improvements, to link in food safety, to link in environmental considerations, to link in the consideration for the local the local grower. This is not about trying to put them out of business. This is about trying to keep them in business, trying to make them grow in terms of what they're doing individually, but to make them safe and to educate them about what they're doing. And whether that's done through cooperatives or through local farmers markets, I don't think it matters. But what is key is that we look after those local folk because they're important for our society, and they can be important but safe contributors to it. So with that, I know I'm a little over, so I appreciate your time. Thank you.